You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today we're going to have really one story, but there's some, it really goes into several stories. And that's the president was on 60 Minutes and had what a lot of journalists and commentators are saying is a softball interview by Steve Croft of 60 Minutes. I'll let you judge that. I have, for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to this show, by the way, is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com, and that's the companion blog. And the reason I point this out, I usually have my notes, videos on the story I'm going to be covering, which is a portion of that 60-minute interview. It was about a 22-minute interview with the president. But I'm just going to focus in on the Al-Qaeda part of that story and what the president is saying, what the president is doing, and what the American people are ultimately going to have to make up their mind as to what they're going to do about the jihadists, the violent jihadists in the Middle East that are killing Americans. Now, what did the president say? Well, first of all, he was asked, how did the Islamic State, the president prefers to call them ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Most of the press today call it either the Islamic State or they use the abbreviation IS. Those in talk radio and television call it ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. The print media, though, are using is the Islamic State, and that's what I'm gonna use because that's what the organization says it wants to be called. They changed their name in June. But there's needs to be said right up front because it's important here, and you can lose sight of the ball because the president is playing this game, as are the jihadists. And it's the name game. What they're doing is changing their names. They're all Al-Qaeda. They're all Al-Qaeda. Now, why would the president play this game and confuse the American people? And the media goes along with it largely. Well, since 2012, the president and many Democrats are saying, we killed bin Laden and Al-Qaeda is on the run. The problem with that, on September 11th, 2012, a branch of Al-Qaeda attacked the Benghazi diplomatic facility as well as the Central Intelligence Agency annex compound that they had there. Four Americans lost their lives. Upwards of a dozen were wounded, some severely. So Al-Qaeda is not on the run. They have reemerged and are now, if anything, more a threat, more dangerous. That said, they're still largely in the Middle East. Some are in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and the Taliban is getting more and more powerful there. But they've largely, the people that proclaim they're part of Al-Qaeda, and there are several groups that do, are largely in the Middle East or in Northern Africa. So Al-Qaeda is not on the run, but what they've done, both the president has done, and now these radical jihadists have done, is change their name to confuse you. And it can be confusing. Now, what you need to understand, there are two major groups fighting for control or fighting the Syrian regime, and that is Jabhat al-Nusra, which is definitely Al-Qaeda, as well as the Islamic State, that at least says they've separated from al-Qaeda, but their origins, they were formerly al-Qaeda in Iraq. So that's just the, I give you that just so to somewhat clear the air, because I know there's a lot of confusion, and like many of you, like me, have a little difficulty pronouncing some of these names. But the point I'm trying to emphasize is these people want to kill Christians, Jews, people of other religions that don't believe in Islam. And it's not just Islam, don't believe in their version of Islam, which is puritanical, very conservative, in the sense that they want to reestablish a caliphate where the land that they're in is controlled by them, but under Sharia law, which is Islamic law. That's what they're about. They want to clear the territory of the unbelievers, the apostates. They call the Christians the Crusaders. But to keep it simple, they don't believe in religious toleration at all. They want to establish a theocracy where Sharia law is the rule of the land, where the leader is the caliph. He's like a tyrant or dictator. But you need to understand this is grounded in Islam. And what's really upsetting is the president keeps trying to divorce these groups from Islam when their origin is in Islam. Now, admittedly, a radical, violent, jihadist version of Islam. But where did it come from? And you really have two groups. This will confuse you and more, but I need to mention them. The Saudi royal family supports, and they control their two religious cities of Mecca and Medina, besides all of Saudi Arabia. A lot of it's desert, but it has, especially the eastern portion, has a lot of oil and natural gas, primarily oil, though. So they're sitting on a lot of wealth, and to maintain their power, in other words, to keep the royal family in power, they have an alliance with the Wahhabi sect, the clerics of the Wahhabi sect, to enforce Sharia law. And they do. They're a rather tyrannical regime, authoritarian or totalitarian, take your pick. But that's the situation. Now, why do I mention them? It's this extreme version of Wahhabism, which is also very similar, if not identical, to the Islamic State, as well as al-Nusra. And a lot of the funding came from private individuals in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, through Kuwait, which is another major producer of oil, mainly for the United Kingdom or the British. And the money and the arms flow through Turkey. And the intelligence services of those three organizations were involved in this. Now, initially, the focus was to overthrow the regime of Bashar Assad, and the United States was involved. That's why the Central Intelligence Agency stayed in Libya after Gaddafi was overthrown. They were gathering up arms, rifles, pistols, ammunition, rocket-propelled grenades, anti-tank weapons, as well as so-called man pads or surface-to-air missiles that you can put on your shoulder and launch and bring down either helicopters or fighter aircraft or transport planes or airliners. But the Central Intelligence Agency in Benghazi was shipping these arms to the so-called Free Syrian Army in Syria. Now, what happened is the president got cold feet. And he should have gotten cold feet, because many of these arms ultimately trickled down, rather quickly, by the way, to these radical jihadists, including Jabhat al-Nusra and later the Islamic State, that have no love for the United States at all or U.S. citizens. In other words, initially the United States, under the direct orders of Barack Obama, when he signed a secret finding, covert finding, that authorized the Central Intelligence Agency to do what it was doing in Benghazi, they weren't sitting around having a picnic, because that's a very dangerous place for any Westerner to be. And the problem is because you have competing rebel groups that after they overthrew Gaddafi, had a bloodbath killing primarily Africans or anyone associated with the Gaddafi regime. And now we're fighting each other for control of the country. And they still are. And the United States, a couple of weeks ago, I think about a month ago, evacuated from Tripoli, which is in the western portion of Libya, our embassy people there. They didn't fly out of the Tripoli International Airport because that was being fought for. Instead, they fled across the desert with a military escort, helicopters, drones, and that's how we got out of Dodge, or in this case, Tripoli. So Libya today is a failed state. Iraq is a failed state. Syria is in the middle of a civil war. Really, it's also a proxy war. And who are the proxies and for who? Iran is supporting Hezbollah. Don't confuse them with Hamas. This is Hezbollah. These are Shia Muslims. And that's important because these radical jihadists are Sunnis. They're Arabs and they're Sunnis. And you need to understand the Arabs hate the Persians, or what we in America call the Iranians. So there's no love lost between Arabs in the Middle East and the Iranians. The Arab states feel threatened by Iran because it has a fairly large population and a fairly significant military capability. But they also, the Arabs are Sunnis, and they consider the Shia, or Shiites, however you prefer saying it, as apostates. In other words, they don't consider them to be of the true faith of Islam, and according to their religion, should be killed. So the Middle East is very much in a state of instability, and that's probably being mild about it. My own opinion, both Libya and Iraq are failed states. They're failed states because you have fundamental divisions between the major population groups, namely the Shia, which constitute roughly 60 to 65% of the population. The Sunnis constitute 20 to 25%. So the remaining is primarily the Kurds in the northeast and the mountains that are a small minority. The Kurds don't like the Iraqis, whether they're Sunni or Shia. The Sunni Iraqis don't like the Shia Iraqis, and it's vice versa. And they've been killing each other since the United States overthrew Saddam Hussein. And remember, Saddam Hussein was Sunni. He was an Arab, and he was Sunni, and was from Tukirk, which is in northern Iraq, and that's part of the area that the Islamic State controls, Iraq and Mosul. Now, I'm giving you background so you can understand the players, but what you need to understand, there's a fundamental undercurrent, and that is a religious war. This is a religious sectarian war that could easily become a regional war. Now, I don't think the Islamic State is as great a threat as the United States government is trying to make it out to be. Now, note, I didn't say you should ignore what's happening there. Because the president was correct that the Marines, or the U.S. military, really, with the help of the Sunnis in northern and western Iraq, largely destroyed and defeated al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, how did they do that? Besides, well, they did it a couple of ways, but they adopted what's called a counterinsurgency strategy, or COIN strategy, where you try to win the so-called hearts and minds of the people in the area. In other words, the local population, by patrolling on foot and having a base right in the neighborhoods, and you're living there. And over time, this worked. But what they also did is they spread the money around. They put many Sunni, especially former military, on the payroll. And as a result, the so-called Sunni uprising was bought and paid for by the United States government. And as a result, al-Qaeda in Iraq was virtually destroyed. Many of them were captured. Many were killed. And the ones that were not captured or were not killed eventually, and even some that were captured in prison, were released. And now they've reformed. reestablish themselves with a new name. They're not calling themselves the Al-Qaeda in Iraq anymore. Their latest name is the Islamic State. I think they're going to keep that name because it's being used to attract Sunni Muslims, both in Syria and Iraq, to overthrow the governments in Iraq and Syria. Because there's a fundamental animosity between the Arab Sunnis and the Shiite Muslims in Iraq. It's a civil war. It's a religious sectarian civil war. And the United States is taking sides in a religious sectarian civil war. You need to understand that. You need to understand also that some of our major, so-called major allies, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait, all initially through their intelligence agencies, were sending money and weapons and people, fighters, to Syria to initially overthrow the Assad regime. What happened is the Islamic State focused in on control of a fairly large region of Syria, the far eastern region. That's why their headquarters is in Al-Raqqa. And that's where a lot of the airstrikes took place. Now, what's happened, and this is not unusual. For Americans, this seems odd, but if you know the history and the backgrounds of these people, people switch sides all the time. Now, they don't switch sides in terms of a Sunni becoming a Shia or a Shia becomes Sunni. But in this case, the Saudis switch sides. They're going after the Islamic State. In other words, the Saudi Air Force, specifically the F-15s, have been responsible for some of the raids into far eastern Syria. Now, why would the Saudis do this? Well, the Saudis, and more specifically the royal family, which is a better way to think of it, the Islamic State wants to overthrow the royal family of Saudi Arabia. Even though religiously they're almost on the same page, the Al-Qaeda branches, whether it's the Islamic State or Jabhat al-Nusra, ultimately want to control the religious cities of Medina and Mecca, and in the process overthrow the Saudi regime, namely the royal family. They consider them corrupt, and the fact they've stolen, is their view of it, trillions of dollars of resources from the sale of oil. And what you also got to keep in mind is you have a lot of Shia Muslims in the eastern portion of Saudi Arabia. So you can understand why the Saudis now have changed their tune to now going to attack the Islamic State. Now, what President Obama's trying to do, and I think he's really trying to confuse the American people with these, he doesn't like to call it the Islamic State. He wants to call it ISIL. ISIL. I'm going to pronounce it ISIL. It's the Islamic State, but more importantly, to get straight, this is Al-Qaeda. They're not on their run. They're on the attack, and they're winning, and they're successful. And up until the airstrikes, they were very successful. Now, the airstrikes have done some damage. There's no doubt about that. It's going to destroy equipment. But what equipment is it destroying? It's largely U.S.-provided equipment that the United States gave to the Iraqi government. And the only reason the Islamic State has it today is because the Iraqi army abandoned tons of equipment, ammunition, vehicles, weapons, and they fled back to Baghdad. Why? Because most of them, not all of them, but most of them were Shiites, Shia. And they knew if they were captured by the Islamic State Sunnis, they would be given no quarter. They're not going to take prisoners. They don't have the manpower to take prisoners. They shoot them. If you're lucky, you get shot. If you're unlucky, they cut off your head and put it on a pole. This is a bloody, violent civil war that the United States has decided to take sides, or at least the president has taken sides. Now, there's some questions here, some fundamental questions that need to be answered. And I've been listening to some talk show hosts. I've also been listening to callers. We have a lot of not only Monday morning quarterbacks, we have a lot of Monday morning generals. There are a lot of warmongers out there that want to go back to Iraq. These are not sunshine warriors. These are people that mostly have never served in the military. Because I'll tell you this. If you speak to the people that have been in Iraq, they don't want to go back there. Because they lost friends. Many of them were serious wounded. And they don't want to be an umpire between the Sunnis and the Shia. Because that's exactly what we were. Now, the problem was, we have generals that are terrific on winning battles. They really know how to win battles, but they don't know how to win a peace, maintain stability. We're not very good, and nobody is really good, at nation building. That's really not in the job description of the U.S. military forces. Their primary mission is to kill people and destroy stuff. The problem is, after we overthrew the brutal regime of Saddam Hussein, for about the first 6 months, the American armed forces were considered heroes. Liberators. Liberators. But what happened? Both Shia and Sunni were expecting the United States government to maintain law and order, maintain electricity, maintain the water supply, and also security from attacks from organizations like Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And when that didn't happen, or it didn't happen in a timely manner, in less than a year, we went from liberators to occupiers. And why both Shia and Sunni would take our money, and they did take our money, they were also killing us with bombs on roads, sometimes 1, 2, 500-pound bombs buried under concrete roads that couldn't be detected by our military. And when our military went on patrol, these bombs were set off and people were killed, or our sons and daughters were killed and maimed and wounded, seriously. And this was going on year after year after year. It wasn't a good strategy. Then we changed the generals or commanders. We changed the strategy, and we're making some progress militarily, but we lost the peace. That's the problem, because the government is dominated by the Shia, and many of those Shia are aligned with Iran. There's some nationalists there, and the Sunnis simply didn't like it, because for decades they have been in control. Now, what happened? In December of 2011, President Obama ordered the complete withdrawal of all military personnel, with the exception of the Marines and some CIA folks in our embassy in Baghdad. In other words, the advantage that we gained from a somewhat successful counterinsurgency effort that result that started in 2007, 2008, was thrown away. Now, President Obama was told by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as other military advisors, you had to leave a military force there to keep the peace or keep stability, however you want to characterize it. And that's probably in the neighborhood of 30,000 to 35,000 minimum. President Obama didn't want to do that because he made a campaign pledge, promise, that he was going to withdraw from Iraq. And he kept that campaign promise. And even though we spent billions of dollars propping up the Iraqi Army, Air Force, the military forces, as well as by training them, providing them equipment, the problem you had is the religious divide. In other words, you had Shia commanders in charge of primarily a Shia army, but with Sunnis in it. And you also had both Shia militia and Sunni militia kidnapping, killing each other. You also had suicide bombs where both sides would go into mosques, marketplaces, police stations, wherever a lot of people were gathered, and blow themselves up, killing what they perceived as their mortal enemies. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, we had a violent, bloody civil war going on, primarily religious-based. And that cannot be denied. As much as the president wants to disavow the jihadists, you have to understand what's motivating them and what's the history. Now, presidents can get away with it because I'll tell you why. Most Americans are not interested in stories regarding foreign affairs. They're simply not. I debated whether or not to even do this story today, but I regard it as too important because we're talking war and peace. We're talking about spending a lot more money, continuing spending more and more money in the Middle East, and all we have to show for it is this failed states, both in Libya and now in Iraq with civil wars, as well as what's happening in Egypt. In other words, I haven't seen improvement here. I've seen it go downhill, and people are picking sides. And they're not picking our side largely because we're unreliable. Yes, President Obama can cobble together a coalition, but how much are each of these countries going to really provide? Maybe some money, maybe a few troops, but they don't want their own people in Iraq and Syria. And there's a good reason why not to do that. This is exactly what Al-Qaeda wants, whether it's the Islamic State or Jabhat al-Nusra. They want the United States to commit troops. So that's where I agree with President Obama. But there's a problem. If we don't commit troops, and our allies are certainly not going to commit troops to any magnitude, then how are you going to win? Because I'll tell you something. Why, you can launch air attacks, whether you use drones, jet fighters, cruise missiles. They're only as good as the intelligence you have, and ultimately you're going to need infantry. You're going to need what Obama won't do is commit combat troops to both countries to literally take, destroy, and then keep the areas that you capture. Let me say that again. You got to go in there and kill them or capture them, and then you have to hold the territory and you have to secure the territory. At the peak of the surge, we had roughly 170,000 troops in Iraq. And many of the commanders were saying that's not enough. They needed more, but there weren't any more to have. That's the problem. And the people at the top didn't want to pull our troops out. They were being pressured by Obama as well as Bush to try to get out there. We're trying to do this on the quick and the cheap, and we're finding it. We couldn't do it quickly. We couldn't do it cheaply. And if you truly wanted to win the war, it was going to take a major commitment of U.S. troops, a lot of money, and a lot of time. In other words, it was the long war, because counterinsurgency wars usually take, that are successful, at least 10 years, and many 20 or 30. And neither the Bush administration or the Obama administration wanted to leave a residual force of the size needed to maintain stability. So we don't have the exact situation that we have in Iraq and Syria today, namely chaos, violence, a religious sectarian civil war where people are brutally killing each other. They're not taking prisoners. They'll capture them and kill them. If not on the spot, they'll take them to a ditch, make them dig the ditch, and then kill them. And that's both sides. These people have long memories. We're going back many, many decades. It's a religious war, and both sides have their backers. Iran backs the Shia. Saudi Arabia is backing the Sunnis. Qatar is backing the Sunnis. Turkey is backing the Sunnis. And these are religious fanatics that they're backing. They don't love Americans. They hate Americans. They want us back there, not because they love us. They want to kill us. Yet we have talk show hosts and Americans calling, let's go back there and show them. Let's show them. And I say, I'm for limited government and I'm a constitutionalist. What does that mean? We have a constitution. What does the Constitution say? Only Congress can declare war. So if you want to go back and truly win, we're talking 200,000, 250,000 troops minimum. And it's probably closer to 300,000 if you add Syria in the game. And we're not talking 1 or 2 years. We're talking 10 or 20 years. Now, would we need to keep, let's round it to 300,000 troops tied up in the Middle East for 10 or 15 years, that's never going to happen. And the military doesn't have that capability. There's more to the world than just the Middle East. You need to think strategically, and you need to think, how do you win the peace? It's easy to win the battle. I say that, but there's going to be a lot of people dying. So if we follow the advice of the armchair generals, call them the armchair radio generals, that call in, let's bomb them to hell. We can do it. Total war. Yeah, we can do it. Might cost us, 10, 20 billion. We can do it in a week or a month. But what's going to happen? Yeah, we'll kill them all. But we're also going to kill a lot of civilians. We're also going to make more and more enemies. And are we prepared to stay there? Yes, the number of troops won't be 300,000 because we don't really have 300,000. But whatever the number is, we don't want to keep them there very long. In other words, we're playing right into their hand of Al-Qaeda because they know how to build the bombs. They have a lot of experience. They want us back running our patrols so they could blow up our vehicles. You see, they're not going to play our game of a conventional war. The United States Army Marines are great on fighting conventional wars. You know, major tank battles, like from World War II. There's a problem. The nations of the world that don't have the money, that have to fight the United States, are not going to play our game. They're going to play a insurgency war, or sometimes called a guerrilla war. They're going to go into hiding. They're going to hide among the people. And the people are not going to be on our side. Not anymore. They don't trust us. We bugged out. Yeah, they'll take our money, and the next day they'll blow up one of our convoys or patrols. So before you call a radio show, or if you're a talk show host waving the flag, and I'm surprised, there's some people that say they're libertarians, but they're sounding like the neocons of McCain, Cheney, and that crowd that really got us into Iraq. Now, I'm not going to go debate that, because I was truly on the fence. And I gave the benefit of the doubt to the president that he knew better. Apparently he didn't. He had bad intelligence. And I really believe that there were weapons of mass destruction there, and most of them went to Syria, not all of them. Some we'll never find. But a lot of them, as well as the Iraqi military officers, generals that were under Saddam Hussein, they fled. They fled to Syria, and we really didn't stop them because we hadn't secured the borders yet between Iraq and Syria. And we really had no plans to win the peace. We were doing it on the cheap, and when you try to rush something and try to do it cheaply, if the plan doesn't go well, and this one did not go well, there were major mistakes made. Major mistake. It was, as one book described, a fiasco. It was. It was an utter, complete fiasco. It was an adventure. Unfortunately, it's cost billions of dollars and upwards of 5,000 dead, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. The debate should occur prior to going to war. And Congress should stand up and do what's right under the Constitution of the United States. And if the American people want to support them, fine. But I think you're going to find that the American people, the majority of the American people, are saying, no, we're not going to go back to that country. Are you out of your mind? It's not that we can. We can win any war. We can destroy any enemy. We have the nuclear force to do it, and we have the conventional force to do it. The problem is the American people do not want the nuclear force used, and the conventional force that can win conventional wars won't be fighting a conventional war. They'll be fighting a guerrilla war in the middle of a religious civil war. And all we'd be doing is repeating the past mistakes. You're supposed to learn from history, not repeat them. And what annoys me, and I'm not going to even point out the gentleman's name, but I was listening last night. I was studying rocks, minerals. Don't ask me why. I was going to do a story on the earthquakes in Japan, but I don't have time to do that. I'll do that tomorrow. But we have a lot of, I think, very confused people out there that haven't done their homework. They don't understand Iraq, Syria, the players, what they're about. They don't know their history, and it's very, very easy to wave the flag and say we should go into Iraq and totally destroy them and wipe them out and get the job done once and for all. Easy to say. I don't see them enlisting. I don't see them enlisting at all. It's someone else's son and daughter that's going to be killed. And I know it's a voluntary force, but you don't waste valuable resources, namely the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, for what? Because I kept saying, why are we in Iraq? Well, I'll answer that question. I've answered it before. There's only one national interest in Iraq. It is oil. And I am tired spending taxpayers' money and seeing American armed forces, whether they're Army, Marines, Navy, getting killed to be security guards for oil companies in the Middle East, namely in Iraq. And we're not even the major investor there. China is. We need a national discussion as to what to do about these violent jihadists. They are a threat. I don't think they're 9 foot tall, though. I think at any time, if there was a will of the American people to take them out, they would be gone rather quickly and brutally. But then we become like the enemy. We would be killing tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of civilians. You notice there's no discussion in the media today as how many innocent civilians were killed as a result of our airstrikes. Do you think the number is zero? I don't think it's zero, but I haven't heard any estimates. I haven't heard any reports. I know why. It's very dangerous for any reporter to go into Syria or Iraq today. So you're not getting much information. But if we truly want to go to total war, in other words, declare war and go to a total war situation and totally destroy al-Qaeda, no matter what its name is, if that's what the will of the American people is, and it is fairly debated, then you should be prepared to send at least 200,000 to 300,000 combat troops into that area and expect casualties. And expect to keep them there at least 10 to 15 years. Now, gradually, we would reduce the force, but you're still going to need to take to keep 30 to 50,000, depending on how it goes. Is that what we want to do? Is that what we want to spend our money on? I don't. I think it's a waste of time. I think it's a waste of money. And these people want to kill each other, and they're going to kill each other. Get out of the way. Don't hold their coat. Get out of the way. Otherwise, you have the distinct possibility of escalating this into a regional war where Iran is involved directly, as is Russia, and this could quickly become World War III. You need to take it a couple of steps ahead. That's what frustrates me. A lot of these people that call in, it's very clear they don't understand the situation there. They don't understand the history. They don't understand what we're getting involved in. But they want to go and totally take out the Islamic State, take out al-Nusra. Yeah, we can do it. I want that. I don't want the United States to be the one to do it. Let the Sunnis do it. Let the Saudis do it. Let Turkey do it. Let Qatar do it. They're the ones that are fomenting these groups. They're responsible for them. Let them kill them. The problem is they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. Why? Because they hate the Shia. They hate the Iranians. So do we want to start World War III over some oil so we can protect ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, Royal Dutch Shell, Chevron, to name just a few? You know, if you want to make risky investments in countries that are politically unstable, those companies should take the risk, and if they succeed, reap the reward. But they shouldn't keep on depending on the United States military to go in there and protect their assets. And that's what we're doing. I don't want to see any more Americans dying because of that. That is our national interest. That's something you don't hear mentioned. What's the national interest? I wish someone asked the president, specifically Mr. Obama, what exactly is the national interest in Iraq? I really would like him to answer that question. And if he's honest and says oil, do you think American soldiers should die to protect the assets of our oil companies, their contracts? You see, empires, and America is an empire, ultimately lead to the destruction of a representative republic. The reason why government has grown so large, both in size and scope, is war. Whether it's World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Cold War, and the wars in the Middle East. That's why government is so big, and they ultimately lead to a loss of freedom and tyranny in the United States. Let the Iraqis solve their own problems. Let the Syrians solve their own problems. In other words, stop being policemen of the world. Stop trying to, the arrogance of sheer power, create democratic nations in our image. It's a loser's game. It's a loser's game. And with that, I have to close my show. My time's running out. And I might add a few comments tomorrow and talk about the earthquake as well. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.